going solar here in the Sunshine State. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a good weekend. And just ahead this Monday morning, how solar co-ops in our area are moving ahead to harness the power of the sun. We are talking solar on the show this morning. What are your questions? Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, Duval rises in downtown Jacksonville in a brand new piece of public art, plus Culpepper live from SEC Media Days in Alabama. That's later in the hour. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, Florida, of course, is known as the Sunshine State. But when it comes to the use of solar power, Florida trails 19 other states, places that get much less sun than we do, like Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York. Because the state is lagging so far behind in the development of solar power, increasingly, homeowners and communities are taking matters into their own hands. The latest example, neighbors in Jacksonville and Neptune Beach have banded together to form a solar co-op. The idea is to save money and make going solar easier while building on a network of solar supporters. Here's Neptune Beach Mayor Elaine Brown.
To really take it seriously and make it affordable for people to go with solar and to, you know, make this a statement for the state of Florida.
So how do these co-ops work, and how is solar expanding around the state, and what are some of the biggest obstacles to the growth of solar in Florida? We're beginning the hour with a closer look as we welcome Angela DeMondbrun. She's Regional Field Director of Solar United Neighbors. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also with us, Christina Kelkors, Executive Director of the North Florida Green Chamber of Commerce. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And if you're just tuning in and you have questions about solar power, maybe you'd like to get it at your home or business. We're talking about the growth of solar co-ops in Florida right now. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Our Facebook page is open too. All right, Angela DeMondbrun, let's begin with you. How does this new solar co-op at the beaches work?
Thank you, Melissa, for having us today. So we just launched last week, and we're very excited to bring this program to Northeast Florida, closer to my home here in Jacksonville. Essentially, partnering with the North Florida Green Chamber and a number of other partners in the area, we will be holding a series of community meetings and marketing to local businesses and residents within the beaches area. And essentially, when we have a number between 20 to 30 signups, and after we conduct a roof review to make sure they have a good roof to go solar, we'll issue an RFP and walk everyone through the process, and hopefully a lot of businesses and residents go solar.
So you need a critical mass of a few dozen interested parties, and then what happens?
We will issue a request for proposal to local and state installers to bid on the project, and letting them know that there is a good number of people that are interested. We've educated them about the solar basics, and in the hopes that they will offer a discount, like a bulk purchasing program.
Right. So people can save thousands of dollars if they install solar through a co-op like this, right?
Potentially, yes.
That's the idea.
Yes.
And that's what's needed, Christina, because the upfront cost to solar installation are what keeps so many homeowners from doing it. And so what are some of the biggest obstacles to going solar? And what's the role of the Green Chamber to help business and homeowners move into this space?
So there are obstacles. And I think one of the things that the North Florida Green Chamber is trying to do here is to make it easier. And a co-op is not only to save money, and that helps with the bulk purchasing idea, but it's also to get people talking about it. And with the series of education classes that we have going on, people can understand it a little bit better. We get a lot of questions. How do batteries work? Do you have to have a battery? What is the cost? Do you have to hire a construction company to do the panels? Do the panels last during a hurricane? So these things are questions that we've been getting as the Green Chamber, and we decided to facilitate this idea of a co-op to make it easier.
Mm-hmm. It's 549-2937 as we talk about the growth of solar power in our area. However, let me ask you this, Angela. A recent piece in the New York Times showed that Florida is lagging far behind other states in the development of solar power, which is sort of a head scratcher. We are behind many other states that get far less sun than we do. This piece essentially pinned the blame on the state's utilities and their influence over our state legislature, that utilities have gummed up the works and made it harder for people to access this for their homes. What's your response to that? And how do you see these co-ops essentially going around that to gain access to solar power?
So our role, Solar United Neighbors, really works to get the community to go solar and learn the basics. And our end goal, ultimately, and we're not shy about it, is to grow that solar army. So when we do find, and when, as this is our 49th program, by the way, that we're launching. And so our experience over the past years in all areas of Florida has grown. We understand the different barriers, whether it's local and statewide. And as we learn, we're growing that solar army. And so when we do see when issues come in front of the Public Service Commission, or when we identify hurdles that have continued that don't need to be there. For example, there's a mention in that article about the liability insurance that we believe no other state has that actually discourages people from sizing their system above 10 kilowatts. There's many hurdles that we've identified, and by growing that solar army, we can move towards pushing back. We believe that solar homeowners and businesses should be part of the conversation overall, and that perhaps investor and utilities shouldn't be leading the conversation.
At this time, they are. It's so fascinating to learn about this. Florida is one of just 8 states that prohibits the sale of solar electricity directly to consumers unless the provider is a utility. There's also a state regulation enforced by the utilities, as you said, requiring expensive insurance policies for big solar arrays on houses. These are barriers to people getting access to this power. Solar accounted for 1% of 1% of electricity generation in Florida last year. States like Vermont and Massachusetts up north that get less sun, they are far ahead. They're in the tens, the teens of electricity generation. Here in Florida, we're still relying on natural gas and coal for the most part.
Yes.
And so, you know, when a utility CEO like Aaron Zahn, who runs JEA, when he came into this studio a few weeks ago, he said on this program that within a decade, it will be cheaper for many homeowners to put solar panels on their roof and install backup battery power in their home and essentially generate their own electricity without relying on a major utility. And so knowing that, what is the future of power generation? Because when you look at the available information, it looks as though utilities are trying to slow that transition down as much as they can to try to stay alive, basically. What's down the road? What can we expect as these trends continue?
Well, we first of all, I think the adoption, as you noted earlier, is minuscule. Is the solar adoption? The costs have come down, but with regard to battery backup, that's not even there yet. The economics aren't right. And I also want to add what you noted about we have power purchase agreements are not legal in Florida. We also don't have an RPS. Which really a statewide goal to reach. But Florida is very unique in that essentially hasn't needed those things. The market is driving the explosion of growth around the state, and whether that's rooftop as well as utility scale. We see utilities across the state. There's a lot of news about they see the economics. They see the benefits. I also want to share with you that why are we still trucking in so much coal and nuclear? Solar is Florida-made sunshine. It adds to the Florida economy, and so we should absolutely be doing more.
Christina Kelcourse, you represent business with the Northeast Florida Green Chamber. In the end, the market will decide, won't it?
It will, and we're hoping that not only residents are making the switch, but that our business owners are also making the switch. You have a lot more power generated through business offices and business warehouses and business places, construction places, they need the power that the residents aren't using. So having the solar there for them is a huge benefit to our clean air.
Let's go to your calls now. What are your questions and thoughts about the growth of solar power in Florida as a new solar co-op begins at the beaches? There's going to be an informational meeting about this tomorrow night at Neptune House in Neptune Beach. We'll repeat that in a few minutes. But right now, the number to join us is 549-2937. George is in Mandarin. Hey, George, good morning.
How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
It's a lovely day in Florida.
Yes, sir. So what's your thought?
Well, I've been doing the research on my own to figure out what components to go with and install for solar. And right now I'm upgrading the electrical system and have been looking at inverters versus micro inverters. And I've been doing all this on my own, and I'd love to be involved in a co-op that could share all this information that somebody's already done the research on. And when it comes to buying the package,
sure. Yeah, and I'm sure you're not alone. So, Angela, you mentioned there are dozens of co-ops now operating throughout Florida through Solar United Neighbors. I know St. John's County started one several years ago. So for people listening like George that want to be in a co-op, what should they do?
So we do not have an open co-op in the Jacksonville area. Currently, this one is just for the Beaches Energy Service area. However, our organization has a wealth of resources on our website, solarunitedneighbors.org, and we help individuals through a membership program go solar. We have a great Go Solar guide on our website that you can simply download. You can email our team at flteam@solarunitedneighbors.org and receive help within just a few days.
And why not have a co-op somewhere in the city of Jacksonville? It's curious to me that it's great that there's one at the beaches. It's great that St. John's County has started down this path. I'm surprised that Jacksonville proper doesn't have one yet. Why is that?
Well, we had planned one for a while back, but JEA changed their net metering policy, solar policy. And so, and we are currently in litigation against JEA because of that.
Let's talk about that a little more, if we could, and explain what's going on with that litigation and why that's hindering the growth of these kinds of co-ops for Jacksonville, if you could.
Sure. Well, we believe that JEA is not following the state statute net metering law, and it's clearly a discouragement from people going solar. And currently right now, we are waiting on the judge's ruling, a final ruling.
So when do you expect that?
We do not know. It could be any day or could be months from now.
And so how then are the folks in Jackson, Neptune Beach getting their power from a different utility?
They're receiving power from Beaches Energy.
Beaches Energy. So, Christina, where people get their power from can make a big difference, it sounds like.
Absolutely. They have different rules for different companies. So that's why we chose the Beaches Energy, because it's more favorable to solar than the current JEA.
Okay. And we are talking about the growth of solar power in Florida. Did you know that here in the Sunshine State, we generate far less solar power than many other states that have far less sun? But solar co-ops are springing up around the state to try to move ahead despite regulational issues and obstacles that have been thrown up in the way. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Mary Jo is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Mary Jo. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I want to just call and share my own experience with a company called Alteray out of Utah. And I responded to an ad on Facebook because I've lived in Florida for 4 years, came from California where everybody has solar, and it's been happening for a long time. So I responded. They came out in one day, got a loan. It's all going to be, you know, 30% is going to be come back in taxes. And my solar panels were up within 2 weeks. That was at the end of February. And I'm still sitting here without them being hooked up. JEA has not been a problem. I've talked to the guy from JEA who said, yeah, well, we're ready to hook you up, but the company out of Utah did it without procuring a permit, a construction or an electrical permit. So they say that we're waiting for that. Since then, I've done a lot of research, and this company has been notorious for doing that. Some people are 6 months out with the panels on their roof. I mean, it's helped because I have, it's like installing shade over your roof and you have less heat coming into your house, but I do not have solar power and I'm very upset and
kind
of don't have anywhere to go, but wait.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
I just want to put it out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So hearing you talk, Mary Jo, I think this illustrates for a lot of people that this is a big thing to do and there can be complications. So what advice do you have for her and others like her that they really want to do this, but it's a process, so there can be issues.
Yes. One of the things that the benefit of the co-op will have is that we have a vetting process. So when we're putting out the RFP for solar companies, we're not just picking, you know, the cheapest one. We're actually vetting them to make sure that they have experience, make sure that the numbers are right, make sure they're not just some cheaper company from out of state that wants to come in and make a quick buck. We're actually picking reputable companies so that the people in the solar co-op that we are running are going to have that experience.
And are these companies listed on your website, Solar United Neighbors? Can people learn more on the website?
They can learn more about our process, certainly on the website. When we issue the request for proposal, we, as Christina said, we ask a number of questions. And for example, requesting a copy of their business license, their workers' comp insurance, their process, how many installs they've completed within just the last couple of years, certainly the local area, their a slew of questions that we, and then a selection committee is formed by the group and they choose and make the best decisions.
3,400 plus homes have gone solar so far with Solar United Neighbors.
Yes, and I'll add about 1,400 of those are just from Florida.
Just
alone.
From Florida. So this is a national concern. Let me ask you, too, as a follow-up, the New York Times in this article about solar power in Florida quoted Art Graham, chairman of the Florida Public Service Commission. They regulate investor-owned utilities in the state. He is actually from this area. He told the NYT that economics is why Florida lags behind in renewable energy sources. He says, because Florida has kept electricity rates lower than those in the Northeast or California, he says the cost savings for homeowners in switching to solar power are more limited. Is that a fair assessment of what's going on?
I think also needs to be recognized the cost of solar has also come down 80 to 90% just in the last decade alone. So it's really on with parity with other fuel sources that utilities are trucking in. So although, and who knows, our solar systems will last 25 plus years. They're warrantied. So yes, there's an upfront cost, but regardless of your utility bill, there's certainly savings the first month.
Right. And so what people need to understand is, particularly if they go through a co-op and they spend between, let's just say, $8,000 to $10,000 to install solar, that cost will pay for itself pretty quickly and over a period of many years. And it increases the resale value of the home, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. We also have information about real estate and the values on our website as well.
Okay. Another question, too, for you, Christina. An email from a listener. How well do solar panels withstand winds from tropical storms and hurricanes?
We tested solar panels, and they actually basically all remained intact.
So that's something some Florida homeowners are worried about, but you don't think it's a major concern?
I think but from what I have researched and read, and specifically a perfect example is after Michael, the solar panels remained intact and weren't affected after that.
Angela.
That's correct. So our program has been in existence for 3 years. And the past 3 years, as we know, we've had a very active, busy hurricane seasons. And so we know going back from our past installs, many of them, absolutely. We didn't hear about this myth of flying panels. And by the way, we have strict building codes, especially along our coastal areas, wind load uplift, that they're absolutely structurally intact. And in fact, in some areas, they protected the roof underneath the array.
Okay, let's go to Roger on the south side. Hi, Roger. Good morning.
Good morning. I investigated installing solar power, and I found the cost to be just too expensive. The prices they were quoting were something like over $3,000 a kilowatt, and the payback time was quite long, and during that time, the efficiency of the solar panels will decrease. It just didn't seem to make sense. I wonder if I was getting poor quotes or if things have changed.
Sure. Okay. And that's I think he's speaking for a lot of consumers out there. What's your answer to Roger?
My answer would be to make sure that the company that the solar installer that you're working with should help you walk through either your business location or your residence and make sure that steps happen before you add solar. Your house should be insulated. You should be checking for things to make sure that you're at top energy efficiency within the house before you add solar. So you may be able to lower your solar costs because you might not need as much if the rest of your house is or your place of business is prepared the right way.
Daryl is in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, go ahead.
Hey. Yeah. You there?
Yeah, go ahead.
This Melissa?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It just seems like if there was a real discrepancy in the difference in price and power in Florida to the Northeast, that Florida could be selling its sunshine electricity, its solar power to the Northeast. So the idea that we don't use solar because our electricity that JEA and FPL generate is cheap, so we don't need to use solar, seems to be disingenuous.
Okay, Daryl, thank you for that point. Angela, you know, it really is remarkable how far behind Florida is on this renewable energy source, given our abundant natural sunshine. We could be selling some of it back to other states. It's really something to behold. And so, you know, the utilities, as you mentioned, have really controlled the process. They have great sway in the state legislature. And so what seems to be taking place across the state is this citizen-powered grassroots movement to try to change that dynamic.
Absolutely. This is the market driving this. People are very interested in going solar. And again, the prices come down. But as more and more people go solar, they see the hurdles that are continually placed and are anti-solar. And that's what our organization, along with many other organizations, have solar in mind, are working on.
Josh tweets the show, improving access to solar energy is something that people across the political spectrum agree on. The only people who oppose solar choice are utilities and those protecting their interests. Here in Florida, groups such as yours and environmental groups have found common cause with Tea Party aligned groups, more conservative groups, to try to increase solar in Florida. It is a bipartisan issue, isn't it?
Absolutely. We are in communities across the state, and we don't ask why people want to go solar because we know there's a number of reasons. And by the way, primarily it's the economics. That's why people are going solar. The Trailblazers and the environmental groups, they went solar a long time ago and continue to expand. However, it's the economics. It's many conservative groups. It's energy freedom arguments. And so it's just incredible. Solar is absolutely nonpartisan, and it's you should do it now.
Here's another tweet. How was it determined Florida electricity prices are low? Did that take into account the percentage of income paid for electricity? That would be a true statement of economics. Here's an email from Jane. Why don't we encourage people to use good old-fashioned solar dryers, a.k.a. clotheslines? They are easy to install and operate. Thanks for that. The technology behind solar power is complicated, but in the end, Christina, it is a very simple idea. It's just the sun. You're just using the sun's power.
That's correct. That's the beauty of it. Living in Florida, the Sunshine State, we should be taking advantage of that. And we do know that renewable energy is cleaner than fossil fuels.
Okay, so with all of that said, you are hosting an informational meeting in Neptune Beach tomorrow night so that people can learn more about the Jacksonville Beach and Neptune Beach Solar Co-op. Tell us about it. What do people need to know? How can they be part of this?
Well, first, please attend. It's at the Neptune House on 510 Florida Boulevard in Neptune Beach tomorrow night at 5:30. And this is just simply an information session where you can learn the solar basics, meaning what is a panel, what is an inverter, how does this connect with my utility? And then we'll talk about the co-op process overall. And then we're going to touch on the solar economics, because that's the number one question people have. We want to give you a flair for what this is going to cost, as well as we'll give you information about any local or national incentives. And by the way, there's a 30% tax credit you want to take advantage of today.
Okay. So people have lots of questions, Christina. This is a good place for them to start, sounds like.
Absolutely. We'll provide resources and the basics.
Okay. So again, Solar United Neighbors is starting a solar co-op in Jacksonville and Neptune Beach. As we learned this hour, because these beaches communities get their power from Beaches Energy, not JEA, this co-op is able to begin this process at the beaches. Solar United Neighbors can't start a co-op inside the rest of the city of Jacksonville right now due to a lawsuit over JEA's net metering policy. But if you live at the beaches, you should come to this. It's tomorrow night, 5:30 p.m. at the Neptune House at 510 Florida Boulevard in Neptune Beach. Go to solarunitedneighbors.org/beachesbusiness for more. And thanks so much, Angela de Monbrun. She's Regional Field Director of Solar United Neighbors. Christina Kelkhorst, Executive Director, North Florida Green Chamber. Ladies, thanks so much for sharing this with everyone. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And up next, it's a new and first of its kind public artwork in downtown Jacksonville. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh. And when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day. We take a walk, the sun is shining down, burns my feet as they touch the ground.
Join us in celebrating the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, featuring Chasing the Moon events at WJCT and MOSH. Visit WJCT.org/events to explore what's coming your way.
So Christina, what's on the front page of today's Times Union?
At the top of the page, Florida lawmakers made...
Around the country, volunteers are reading local newspapers to people with vision loss or print disabilities. Did you know WJCT has this service? On a special radio we provide, you'll get the Florida Times Union every day. Learn more at wjct.org/radio reading. With help from sponsors like Florida Eye Specialists, Radio Reading gives voice to the printed word.
I'm Lindsay Kilbride, host of WJCT's podcast, What It's Like. It starts with some of the best conversations recorded in Jacksonville by StoryCorps.
I remember being on the school bus and passing by and seeing you outside. You were under the addiction at the time.
And then I go deeper into the story.
How do you cope with the guilt you still feel? How do you cope with that?
Subscribe to What It's Like from WJCT wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon, the best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's a first of its kind public artwork in downtown Jacksonville, a brand new sculpture that is also a bike rack that spells out Duval is now up on Ocean Street. You'll see it as you come off the Main Street Bridge into downtown. Kayla and Eric Moet are two of the artists who created the Duval sculpture, and they join us now with more. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so tell us about this piece. What inspired it?
Well, first and foremost, the community in Jacksonville, especially the Black community in Jacksonville. Part of this commission was having a town hall meeting at the Jacksonville Public Library, and several members of the African-American community started a dialogue about the lack of representation of Black history in Jacksonville, despite the bevy of amazing, rich Black history. And we said we'd love to work together to honor that history.
And this is a way of honoring a chant, a slogan, you know, that started at parties and in that local hip-hop scene. And it's made its way into the mainstream. People chant it at Jaguars games. It's sort of a rallying cry, Duval.
Yeah.
And so you decided to turn that into art.
Well, we decided to connect the past with the present and center the Black history and reconnect Duval with the community in public space.
And how did you decide on the design? It's a sculpture, but it's also a bike rack and it's letters. So there's really nothing like it anywhere else in town or even in America. This is a unique new kind of piece of public art, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's our first piece of public art, permanent piece of public art. So we want to get the most bang for our buck, so to speak.
For the city's buck.
And for the city's
and for
buck.
And for the taxpayer's buck.
Well said. But really, we wanted to tie in meaning to it, and we take the public and public art very seriously. So when we heard the voices of members of the community, we really wanted to integrate that into the design.
Okay, and this is interesting because not only is it public art, not only does it give a nod to the rich African-American history of the city, you're promoting bike culture in downtown too. This is
sure.
A way for people to lock up their bikes. There are other bike racks around town, but nothing as interesting looking as this one,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, I think in Jacksonville we have currently a car culture, but downtown we're starting to see a lot more people ride their bikes. And this is a way to reimagine kind of what the new Jacksonville with the history of Jacksonville looks like.
Now, Eric, you are a graduate of Harvard's Graduate School of Design. Your work has been published in the New York Times, the BBC, Huffington Post. Kayla, you are a former professional dancer. So you come to this with a really strong artistic background. How do you see the role of public art in placemaking in cities like this one?
Sure. Well, I'd also like to note our collaborator, Samuel Maddox, who I met at Harvard, who worked with us on this project. So shout out to you, Samuel. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to think about representation in public space. What is represented in public space? What is not represented in public space? Jacksonville is a really interesting example because it's named after Andrew Jackson, who never even visited Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
Yet so many of the histories in Jacksonville are not represented. So Jacksonville is just an analogy to any other city in the world, frankly. So I think it's just important that we're critical of what is and what is not represented, but also really optimistic about all the work that can be done. And even doing a project like a bike rack can start to get these conversations started.
And by the way, this Duval sculpture and bike rack was sponsored by the Downtown Investment Authority, JEA. So you got officialdom, I guess, to buy into this. This is an official city thing. And it's no small thing to get something through that process, right?
It is not. A lot of work went on behind the scenes, and there was a lot of thought put into this.
Okay, so it's up now. What kind of reactions are you getting from people?
People love it, but it's very important to note that this is just the beginning of the conversation. And we need to keep talking about centering the history of the Black community in Jacksonville's narrative of how it sees itself and its current identity and its future and how it brands itself.
And this is one example of that. For, you know, we've talked about this on the show a lot. There is a statue of Andrew Jackson by the Jacksonville Landing. Of course, mm-hmm. His historical legacy is complicated, to say the least.
Yes, ma'am.
There are statues of Confederate generals all over this city. That's controversial. There are few monuments and memorials to the African Americans who hailed from this area, who became important and national figures like James Weldon Johnson, for example. There has been a movement lately to create a memorial and a park to James Weldon Johnson in the La Villa area. And so how do you see Jacksonville sort of coming around to recognizing that it needs to do a better job of representing all of its historical figures?
Sure.
Publicly.
Well, I think, again, public is the key word, and public space has this beautiful tension. It really speaks to democracy. It's an analog to democracy. You have the public who desires to represent their viewpoints and histories, and then you have the control of the local, state, federal government over that public space. So there's always this beautiful tension, and I think it's important to note that much like democracy works to represent the voice of the people, I think that what is represented physically should also be directly in line with that. So whether it's Black history or any other history, it's really important that the voices of the citizens of Jacksonville are centered in this conversation.
Sure. What's next for you now that you've done this?
We're moving to England. I'm going to Oxford.
You're moving to England. Yeah. You're going to Oxford. What are you going to study?
I'm pursuing my MBA.
And why Oxford?
Why Oxford? So I've been in philanthropy and nonprofit development for the majority of my career, focusing on arts and cultural institutions. And Oxford's MBA program has a strong bent towards social impact and things like social impact bonds and impact investing. And I believe that blended capital is really the future. So,
well, you'll have to, you'll have, if you ever come back, you'll have to tell us a little bit more about that.
I can't wait.
And you're going along?
Oh, yes.
And what are you going to do in England?
I'm going to do a mixture of teaching and practice. So it's really exciting in this day and age that you can kind of balance those two things and have one foot in the academy and another foot in actually making projects.
It's cool, though, that you're leaving behind a physical, tangible object that expresses your philosophy and your talents. How does that feel for you guys?
I mean, it feels great, but it also, it's felt great to really see the people utilizing it. We just had a dance video shot there yesterday.
Shout out to One Vibe, Jen Colvin, the whole Vibe tribe.
Yep. And just it having something that sparks joy and enthusiasm in people is really, really the main kind of takeaway from this.
Yeah, we've shifted ownership. This is now downtown Jacksonville. This is now Jacksonville. This is owned by the Black community. Kimberly Morrison, you know, this is all theirs. So I'm just
so
grateful
say
to
it
have
loud,
the honor.
Say it loud and proud then, right?
Absolutely.
Say it, guys.
Duval!
All right. Kayla and Eric Moed, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact 358-6327 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
By the time today's babies are 80 years old, the sea is projected to have risen up to 6.5 feet. So what's being done to protect life on the first coast? At ADAPT from WJCT, you'll find stories about adaptation by everyone from the Navy to realtors and the city of Jacksonville. Join us now at adaptflorida.org.
Mm-hmm. From doo-wop and oldies to acoustic music, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Thievery Corporation is what's spinning this week on the Electro Lounge. Show host and station manager David Luckin is here now with a look ahead to Turntable Tuesday. Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I've got a good one tomorrow night. I almost said tonight. I'm going to produce it today. But Thievery Corporation, double vinyl. It's called The Cosmic Game, David Byrne, Flaming Lips. It's just great music. You are hearing it now.
Let's take a quick listen. Okay, so how'd you choose this one?
Oh, because everybody loves the Thievery Corporation. I can never play enough. And we've got someone here named Brady. If I don't play the Thievery, he's mad at me. So, no, I love the Thievery Corporation. I went to see them a few years ago at Red Rocks, and they are just so good. It's a little reggae. It's a little sitar music. It's everything you want in independent music. And David Byrne, so nice to hear him still working after Talking Heads. Years later, he sounds great.
He does. Now, and Turntable Tuesday is great because you take a whole album and you break it down for your listeners.
And usually from the first track to the last track, the only time we cheat is if I'm filling at the end and I can get in two or three songs. But this is a double, so this is going to take pretty much the full 2 hours. And it's just, I just love this kind of music. It's modern, it's fresh, it's nothing oldie in this music.
That's what the Electro Lounge is all about. It's chill out music, and it's always fresh and different, and you won't hear anything else like it anywhere else on the radio.
Exactly. And tonight we're going to share the new DeFaz album called Black White Mono, and that's really good too. And that's from vinyl, but I didn't pitch it as Turntable Tuesday, but I'm playing a lot of that tonight. And on Wednesday, after I said no oldies, we're kind of flashing back 50 years to a lot of the great music we all listened to in the summer of 69.
But you don't have a genre. You transcend all classes of music, all boundaries, all decades. It's a little bit of everything, which is what I love about it.
Always. And I meant to say today, and every time I come on your show now, I'm not a music expert, just a music fan.
Oh, you're too modest.
You know everything. I said, no, I just know what I like. And I know a little bit about all the genres. So I do my best to keep the programs mixed up and with that element of surprise.
That's right. It's the Electro Lounge. Listen at 9 o'clock almost every night of the week with Turntable Tuesday, of course, tomorrow night with Thievery Corporation. We start you in the morning, and David gets you ready for bed.
There you go. I like to say to Melissa when we're not on the air, she tells you everything you need to know, and then I help you forget it.
That's right. Yeah. Always good to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, Culpepper, live from Alabama for SEC Media Days. That's in a moment here. We'll be right back.
It's the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, the first manned mission to the moon. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with historians and astronaut and space program workers who were actively involved in getting Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins to the moon and back. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
50 years after the Apollo 11 moon landing, the head of NASA has his sights on another giant leap for mankind.
Everybody who was alive when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon, they know exactly where they were when that day happened. My generation does not have that memory.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. NASA's plan to put a human on Mars. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Femi Okeh. A new documentary looks at the little-known deportation of 2,000 mostly immigrant miners from Bisbee, Arizona in 1917.
The deportation was not a response to a labor action. It was that to a limited extent, but it was also in the nature of an ethnic cleansing.
We talk to the director about what this event means today. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Immigration agents are targeting thousands of undocumented families. The Trump administration says the raids will round up those who entered the country illegally. Critics say it will hurt people who do no harm to our country and hurt those looking to fix our broken immigration system. ICE and the politics of fear, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it is the observed start of football season in the South.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
SEC Media Days gets underway today in Birmingham, Alabama, and our own Cole Pepper is there. He's live on the phone from Bama. Hey, Cole, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, they're flocking to Birmingham once again to get things started for the start of college football. This has sort of become an annual pilgrimage, always in Birmingham. Last year it was in Atlanta. But there's one thing that is certain when you start talking about SEC Media Days is that there will be a lot of folks who cover college football and a lot of folks who coach and play college football coming to the same place to discuss the upcoming season. Interesting how this event has developed over the years. I mentioned that Birmingham is the only host other than Atlanta last year. We could hear today that the conference could start to move this thing around from city to city a bit more. Nashville, Dallas, New Orleans, and Orlando have all been mentioned in the past as potential landing spots for this event from time to time. Of course, I'm going to ask the question, why not Jacksonville? Mm-hmm. If it's going to go to Dallas, of all places, where Texas A&M is the only school in the general vicinity. Why not a place where Florida and Georgia play each and every year? Something to consider as we look at the future of this event. But you're talking about hundreds, maybe thousands of members of the media coming into a town to cover the start of the season. It certainly would be a boost to a local economy, to be sure. Today, we'll hear from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey to see what his agenda is going to be for the upcoming season, what's important to him for the Southeastern Conference. Then we'll talk with Florida head coach Dan Mullen and three Gator players, including quarterback Felipe Franks, looking ahead to the 2019 season. The Gators made a big jump last year in Mullen's first year, becoming a 10-win team, winning a bowl game, and reestablishing themselves as contenders in the SEC East. Of course, the team that everybody in the East is chasing is Georgia, and tomorrow the Bulldogs get their turn. Head coach Kirby Smart and some players, including quarterback Jake Fromm, will speak here in Birmingham, talking about not only trying to defend the SEC East title, but also trying to find a way to get over the hump. They have not been able to get past Alabama in the most important game of the season for them the last couple of years, including in a national championship game 2 years ago. At the end of the week, we'll reveal the media picks for the All-SEC and projected champions of the SEC East and West, and I suspect, once again, Alabama and Georgia will be the selections. Florida likely to be picked second in the East. That's my projection. That will also be what my ballot will look like. And I think we could be in for a great Georgia-Florida game this year once again with those two teams coming to Jacksonville with a chance to really make a big statement for their seasons.
Sure. So much happening with SEC football, but you've got some other sports news and notes. Let's talk for a minute about Wimbledon.
What a final yesterday. Novak Djokovic outlasted Roger Federer in five sets in a match that lasted 4 hours, 57 minutes. Can you imagine at one point, man, Djokovic fought off match point and came back to win? What's even more amazing that if you go back to the first Grand Slam that Federer won, that was the 2003 Wimbledon final, there have been 65 Grand Slam finals played since then. Djokovic, Federer, and Rafael Nadal have won 54 of them between the three. Think about that. In the last 16 years, three guys have won all but 11 of the biggest tournaments in the world. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And beyond that, of the last 59 Grand Slam finals, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic have played in all but two of the Grand Slam finals. Andy Murray and Milos Raonic played in the 2016 Wimbledon finals, and 2014 Marin Cilic beat Kei Nishikori in the straight test with the U.S. Open. Those are the only two finals in the last 59 Grand Slam finals where Djokovic, Nadal, or Federer were not involved.
It's a streak. I would think it would get kind of boring to cover as a sports guy. You might want to see some new names emerge at some point.
It is, other than the fact that those three are such three different styles of players and three different personalities of players. You know, we talk a lot about, well, who's the greatest of all time in different sports. And, you know, I think when you have two or three guys at the top, it's a storyline you can follow and casual fans can follow. You know, it's the Bird versus Magic kind of theory where you have, you know, just a small handful of guys who continue to compete. And just think, you know, if one or two of those guys never existed, how dominant would the numbers be for the other one or two who was still around? As it stands right now, these guys are going to go down in history. You know, take your pick. You're going to argue who the greatest of all time is by the time their careers are done. But it's just a remarkable trio to have dominated a sport for so long.
Let's talk about the women's side. Serena Williams went down in the women's final.
11th final for Serena, and this is sort of the flip side to the Federer, Djokovic, Nadal trio. Serena has been the dominant player on the women's side, her 11th final, but really outplayed by Simona Halep, who won in just 56 minutes. So contrast that with nearly 5 hours for the men's final. Great run by Serena, but it comes to an end one match short.
Okay, last but not least, 1 week from today, the first Jaguars players report for training camp. Football, it's so hot out, but football season is just around the corner.
It is. It'll be the rookies, first-year players, and quarterbacks reporting. Significant, of course, because we'll see Nick Foles come to training camp for the first time as a Jacksonville Jaguar with all the expectations that come with a new quarterback. And we'll have coverage starting next week.
And enjoy your time in Alabama, Cole. Thanks for getting on the line with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. 1A's up next. On tomorrow's show, exploring the moon from all angles as the nation prepares to mark the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Have a great day. We'll see you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.